Jeremy. I'm here with The Last Man. How you doing, Derek?
I'm doing well.
We have a guest in with us. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Hey, everyone.
Well, we've been working for a while to get you in here and talk with you. How have things been lately? You been doing all right?
Doing very good after like 1 month of travel.
Yeah.
Finally go home.
Yeah, you do travel a lot.
Yep.
That's great though. I used to travel and now these days I enjoy staying home, but it's really interesting. So this is an interesting conversation, and I've prepped a lot for this conversation. I think we all have, just because I think there are, and if it's okay, you mind if I introduce it and just kind of describe what we're thinking and where?
Yeah, go ahead.
So, as an American, there's a lot going on these days. A lot of discussion at a national level around policy, around international policy, around the way things are going with our country, whether we agree with it, and we are on this show. We're really big about talking about perspective, right? One of the things we've talked about a lot is race and race relations, and it's always valuable to have another person's opinion and input. And I am interested in hearing from you as far as what your experiences have been. And as I've mentioned to you, there's kind of a couple of veins I would like to keep it within, because I mean, we can always do it again if we want, but I wanted to give an idea of what we're going to be discussing. So, you are a Chinese citizen.
Yep.
And you've been in the U.S. now for
10 years.
And so, from my perspective, that gives you a very unique perspective. I just use the word perspective a lot, but that's an interesting angle, because as an American, I think we hear a lot about China, a lot of news. The news that does come out of China, and there's a lot of misconception. There's a lot of things we don't understand. And so the two angles that I'm interested in covering are not just how you see the United States and some of the challenges we've been dealing with over the past, let's say year, specifically with the election cycle, or we can go larger, 10 years, and I'll go as large as you want on that. But some of the challenges we're dealing with culturally, and some of the challenges that China is dealing with, and some of the stuff that you're seeing on that front too. So that dual perspective is very interesting to me. Out of curiosity, just to start, to kick us off, tell us a little bit about what your experience has been here in the U.S. and what you're willing to share.
Sure. Yeah. So I want to share a little bit of my background. So I born in China, go to college in China, and then I come to States for master degree. I got 2 master degree in States, and then start working here. So I have been in States for 11 years already.
Okay.
And then, to be honest, every time I see the news, go to CNN, go to Netflix, when I see something about China, majority are bad, right? Similar in China. When I was in China, majority I see on the news, on the TikTok, talking about United States are bad, right?
Yeah.
So I think both countries has its own issues or problems, and then the good part, bad part will have good and bad, right? So
I 100% agree with you on that.
Yeah. So my first day in United States is pretty shocked.
Yeah.
So I landed in JFK from Shanghai.
Yeah.
Right. From Shanghai, I think everything is nice. When I go to JFK, JFK is not the best airport ever.
No, it's not very clean.
Right. And then I stayed there for the whole night, because during that time I was a student. I don't have I have money for the hotel, right?
Right.
So I stayed in JFK airport for the whole night. That night is unique.
Yeah.
Right. And then my first meal in the United States is Bojangle.
Yeah.
Bojangle.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And then...
Welcome.
I like it, to be honest.
Okay.
Yeah. But the people who... when ordering the Bojangle, because I was the first time for Chinese students to come to the States, it's pretty difficult, right?
Right.
For example, I don't know ketchup is ketchup. What I'm saying is tomato sauce.
Right.
I'm sorry for that.
Right.
And then the people who doing the ordering is not very nice.
Right.
Basically, pretty mean to me.
New Yorkers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't mean to disparage every New Yorker on the planet. They have a reputation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then... I still remember the taste of that first Bojango.
Yeah.
I still like it. I still want to go to the same restaurant to try it again. Yeah. So the cultural difference is huge.
Yes.
Right. When I was in graduate school, I have professors like us, like me, mm-hmm. want to talk with me. I have classmates or friends like respect me. Right. But I also have some classmates don't like me.
Yeah.
Right. So after graduate, working for United States company, Canadian company, and also Chinese company, the colleagues, right? Some people treat me good, treat me bad, and lots of experience about that.
Sure.
So even the HR team is not very professional. Sometimes they see you are Chinese, they will have some, they don't treat you fair sometimes.
Of course.
Right? Mm. So,
That's a shame. I'm sorry. I wish that didn't happen, but you know.
But it's getting better and better. So, but living in the United States and then living in China, it gives you two totally different feelings, right? So in China, I feel very safe. That's the first thing, right? Because China has no guns, and then you're right. The police in China is pretty, pretty tough, right?
So, police have guns.
Yeah, police have guns. Yeah, you're right. But not all the police have guns in China.
I understand. Yeah.
So I can walk out in the downtown street, 2 a.m., 3 a.m., 4 a.m. I don't need to worry about anything.
Right.
But here in the States, sometimes I don't feel very safe because of guns, because of the shooting, things happening even in our neighborhood.
Yes.
Right? So, for example, I went to New Orleans last week for business travel, last month actually. And then last week, the Bourbon Street.
Yep.
You know what happened, right? So I was, the picture in the news is that street, that place, exactly what I was walking during that time.
Yeah.
The Bourbon Street, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm lucky. Mm-hmm. Every time I was there, the time I was there, I was still safe. But sometimes it's like, can I still be that lucky all the times? So that's a feeling I'm not feeling very safe.
Right.
Right. That's a safe part. But free speech part, United States, awesome. Right? I can say anything, basically.
Right.
But in China, the free speech is kind of an issue for me.
Right.
Right. I cannot speak whatever I want. And then the government will delete whatever I post in website, right?
Right.
In apps. Like, we don't have tweets in China, right? We don't have Facebook in China. We don't have Instagram in China. We only have China app in China, right? So free speech is kind of a big difference between the two countries. Talking about another difference is the transportation part. In the United States, basically, you don't have car, you don't have lag. That's what I'm feeling, right? You cannot go anywhere without cars, right? But in China, you don't need a car. The public transportation is much, much nicer than here.
More efficient.
More efficient, yeah. So I give you an example from Shanghai to Beijing. It's the same distance from New York to Chicago, right? Yeah. We can easily go to a train, arrive there in 4 hours. 4.5 hours maybe, but here in the States, if you go to public transportation without a train, take 24 hours, airport, you have to go through JFK, you have from your living space to JFK and then waiting there for two hours and then fly 2 hours, two or three hours and then get out from the Chicago airport.
Yeah, even more if it's international.
Yeah. So the public transportation is a thing I miss from China.
Yeah.
That's a transportation, but I don't need a car because I can go to bus, go to subway. The train is connecting every single town.
Yeah.
So that's an awesome part. But the bad part is if you're buying a car in China, it's much more difficult than buying a car in the U.S. So, for example, here, let's say you can easily buy a car in 10 grand, right? You buy a used car, 10 grand, and then that's it. Or if you buy a brand new car, let's say 50 grand, you can afford that. That's a half of the, the salary, like the half of the income of the whole year of the housing family, right?
Right.
So, but in China, it's different. The whole family basically need to spend 1 year of their income or 2 years income to buy a car.
Mm-hmm.
That's a income to expense ratio is totally different. Buying a car here in the United States, you basically sometimes some people only need to spend 1 month of salary.
Right.
So cars are super affordable in China. In the U.S. So basically everybody will have a car, right? So another difference is about food. even though there are not lots of Chinese food here. I love the food here. The food here is very safe. The food safety is not an issue in the United States, right? But in China, I think that I have lots of concerns about what I was eating. The restaurant is awesome. I'm not talking about the restaurant issue. I'm talking about the food itself, the vegetables, the meat, those kind of issues, right? I think I will be more like the food in U.S., even though some of them are not this good. Okay. Right. From a Chinese.
Talk about the FDA the regulation. Exactly. Yeah.
Is that more like a low-quality restaurant, or is there a difference between low-quality restaurants and high-quality?
Yes. In China, though, you will see lots of low-quality restaurant and high-quality restaurant, but the food itself, I mean, I'm talking about the pork. I'm talking about the meat, right? The raw food.
Okay. Yeah,
right?
It's probably a combination of everything from the FDA to, which there are plenty of issues there, but all the way to the health inspections of the food distribution, the food restaurant, and everything. So
and then talking about the life, housing is another kind of a big difference, right? In United States, majority of the people living in a single family house, right? And then, but in China, you should be super rich to afford a single-family house.
Right.
Majority of people live in the apartments, in the super tall buildings, apartments, right? But majority of people are not renting, they're purchasing the apartment, but the apartment is very, very expensive.
Yeah.
So in Shanghai, basically one apartment in a nice area, you basically need to spend $2 million for an apartment.
Wow.
Not a huge apartment, it's kind of a, it's basically a storage room plus a garage, that's kind of big space, right?
It's, right. It's like New York prices.
Yeah, New York prices.
Yeah, that's the same thing.
Yeah. So housing, living in the United States in a single family house, that's awesome. And then it's pretty affordable for majority of the people, right? So housing is big difference for me, I think.
Right.
Yeah. Basically, majority of the people, I think, can afford the house, no matter it's a big one or small one, but most people can afford, right?
Right.
Then what are the differences?
I do think you see a lot more people living in the country as opposed to the city.
People will be more likely to live in the city, I think, from my perspective. I will not choose living in the countryside of China. So, the other differences will be the education difference. So in China, I don't think I need to spend lots of money on the education. I did not spend anything, I don't think, anything for the high school. And then the college, because majority of the college in China is public, right? So the college did not charge a lot. I don't think any students will come out of college with debt.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a big difference about the education United States and China, because lots of my friends in the United States, they do have college debt, education debt after graduation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, also graduate school in China, like if you want to do master, PhD, basically it's free. So the government have lots of supporting programs for higher education.
Right.
So the government is trying to push the students to have engineering degrees, higher degrees on that. Engineering's on AI, computer science, those kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, but here in the United States, it's different, right? And I don't think government is trying to educate people to have engineering degrees. The tuition is very high.
Right.
It's very high.
Yeah.
Majority of the students will have very high debts.
Yes.
Especially the doctors, right? If you want to go to medical, doctors, you will be $500,000 debts after graduate, right?
$500,000, something like that,
So, but China, if you want to go to doctor's degrees, I think it's free.
Yeah.
It's like a couple thousand dollars, that's it.
So, out of curiosity, how's that subsidized? I mean, so at a national level, I'm not familiar. I understand you guys are some sort of blend of, communist and having a lot of democratic inroads now, or not democratic, having a lot of capitalistic. Inroads. So how is what sort of tax burdens levied in China? What does that look like?
So because I haven't got a chance to work in China, I can tell from my parents.
Right.
So their tax rate is around like 30 to 40%, mm-hmm. similar here in United States. In mm-hmm. United States, you have state tax, mm-hmm. You have FECA, you have federal tax, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have a normal income, you'll have like 30 to 40% tax rate, right? I think this is similar with China.
That's good. Yeah. I've wondered about that.
It's pretty similar, I think.
Interesting.
Yeah. But if you're a business owner, you only have, you always have ways to escape tax, right? Yeah.
Sure, of course.
Yep. Mm.
All right.
Majority of the schools, like a college, I think universities are all public.
Yeah.
Majority.
I wonder what percentage of Chinese students these days are going through university level. Is it a high percentage?
It's pretty high percentage. And then the government is trying to increase the percentage because the labor market in China has a little bit issue right now because we don't have lots of job.
Right.
Right. The economy is going a little bit slower than before, right?
Right.
So,
and you China don't need, a college degree to do building work, right? To build runways and
I think the government is trying to kind of using that 3-4 years college time to delay those kind of laborers into the market. So the government is trying to make a higher level education more accessible, more available for normal students.
Yeah.
Yep.
Interesting.
Usually it's before, like during the, like 20 years ago, it's pretty difficult to go to a good university in China. But right now, more and more students can go to universities.
Yeah.
How would you think, how would you rate like the quality of the education since you've been here and when you were in China?
I think the basic education, I think is there a term called basic education?
Primary.
Yeah, primary education, right?
Yeah.
Primary education, China is doing a great job.
Yeah.
So I went to...
you guys lead the world in mathematics, don't you? As far as I recall.
Yeah, that's why I say the basic education is called, it's like basic math, basic physics, basic chemical, those kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I think China is doing a great job. But here, I don't think the basic education is as strong as China. Mm-hmm. Maybe
I agree.
The strongest different term is bad, okay?
Yeah, we can agree on that.
Yeah, so...
we've deprioritized the education portion of our education.
I have a classmate when I was in graduate school. I asked the stupid question, can you name a city in China?
Mm-hmm.
And then the reply is Turkey.
Turkey?
The response is Turkey.
Yeah.
Tokyo. I was like, come on. That's Japan. It's not China.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think that was something I noticed as well, especially as I started traveling, was that the American schools don't do a good job of international. I only say a lot. I think there's a huge disparity in the type of, in the quality of education you get in different socioeconomic classes, different areas in this country. But yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to cut in. Go ahead.
Yeah. So the basic education, I think China is doing a good job, but higher level education, like when you go to the college, I think the United States is doing a much, much better job.
Yeah.
Because, what I'm feeling is the 4 years I stayed in college in China, I learned only a few things.
Right.
But the 2 years graduate school in States, I learned a lot.
Yeah.
Right. So, because previously the China basic education is too intensive. It's like the pressure is so high, right? When the children away from the parents, away from those kind of crazy high school teachers, they are free in college. Right? So that's the reason why I think the college education, the university education is not as good as the States.
Right.
Yep.
But how many, I guess like for primary education, but how many hours a day do you go to school or?
My experience, I wake up at 6. I have 1 hour of sports for the whole day. And then I go back to my dorm around 9:30 p.m. So 6 a.m. to 9:30. 1 hour to do the exercise, whatever. And then all the remaining time, basically, math, physics, English, blah, blah, blah.
In classes?
Yeah, classes and then homeworks.
And what age was this?
Sorry?
Is this primary school or are you talking...
From high school, high school, primary school, also primary school. So basically from 6 year old to like 17, 18 year old. years, 9 years. Mm-hmm. Pretty.
So you pretty much stay at the school, like,
yeah,
that's your life.
Exactly. So mm-hmm. that's why I say most of the Chinese students after the high school, when they go to the college, right. they're free.
Right. They get freedom and
yeah, you know, they will stop. I shouldn't say stop, but they will not study as hard as before.
Right. They don't apply themselves as stringently. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. We see the same thing here in the States, mm-hmm. although we've had a huge, I don't know how to phrase it, a huge initiative over the past couple of generations, I would say, that has dumbed down our education system a lot. Okay. It's increased, it's promoted passing over educating, which has been a problem. And, yeah, that brings a whole slew of issues into range, you know, like H-1B visa issue and the stuff that's been bouncing around in the news around that, these days, the past week or so.
Yeah.
And, but I don't know how most Americans see this. I only know how I see it, and you can share how you see it as well. But I'm of the opinion that we have to either fix our education problem or we have to import it, right? There's not really an option. Either that, or we let the talent go to elsewhere, and we decide that we don't want to be a future leader. Those seem like the choices that you can't have your cake and eat it too. You either practice and get good and develop engineers and physicists and people that can calculate orbital trajectories in their sleep, so that we can actually get off this planet and start doing things that we're going to be doing over the next 100 years, or someone else is going to do it. So I think that's I don't know.
Yeah, that's definitely a problem, I think. And when you're to a point where you have to scout people from other countries, you know, I think that's a real issue. Like, you have to, you should be prioritizing, like, the younger generation, because they're the ones that are going to inherit, you know, and take care of you.
Yeah, but we have to equip them in that prioritization. It has to be to equip them. And the beauty of being... of having the world to choose from is you can get the cream of the crop candidates if people want to come, if it's a desirable system for them to work into and partake in, then, you know, I think that's, in my opinion at least, that's the beauty of the American dream, the American life, is the idea that you can come and work towards a better future, and that's actually a huge part of it, is the idea that your children will have a better future than you do. I think most countries sort of judge their economic standing by whether that's the truth or not. And so everybody's working towards the case of that being it. We're in a very interesting time, I think, in this world where, you know, we're on the precipice or the advent of AI and the amplification of human initiative and ability with these emerging technologies. And it's going to be interesting to see how the future plays out. So to get to another topic, if you don't mind. So, let's jump over to the other fork. Thank you for sharing about how you see the U.S. and all that. How do you see some of the social distress you've been seeing in the U.S. over the past? Because I think we ended up in a very unusual position over the past, I would say, 16 years or so. But specifically over the last year or two, where it looked like half of this country was pointed at the other half of the country like a gun, what's that been like for you? How have you seen that, or what's your perspective on that been? Coming from the country you come from and the experiences you've had.
Yeah. So you're talking about the social distress.
Well, yeah, the social distress, the social, our country seems to be over a debate of like first principles almost, in a way. It's a, what are we going to be doing here? At least that's how I perceived the disagreement over the last year or two in particular. And, you know, we have the initiative, we have what we've produced, and, you know, I love and adore this country. And I love what it stands for. And at the same time, I recognize that there have been decisions made in this country that I don't agree with, that I don't stand on, that I don't, I don't think should have happened. I do not agree with the march, the run that we've made on Russia over the past 30, 40 years. I don't agree with a number of decisions. Now, I wasn't the one in the position to make those decisions. No one asked my opinion either, but I don't think it was the smartest way to advance a global economy and to bring everybody into the fold. I think we're at a point in human history where we have to bring each other into the fold. We either survive together or we die together. And I guess the reality that we might all die together just doesn't occur to most people, right? They just think it's this fanciful, this, oh yeah, in some dystopian future. But I think that means the more strong allies you have to lean on, the more people that are capable of standing on their own, the more people you have to lean on if you need it. And so I think we have to find a way as a country to start looking at other countries that way. We've done that historically. We have. Now, there have been plenty of actions to the contrary where we've gone in and the government in behind closed doors has made decisions that they shouldn't have made or advanced things they shouldn't have advanced. Or, you know, I won't get into all of them. But there have been a lot of them. But there's also been plenty of good. There's been a lot of, you know, building the infrastructure of countries up around us and stuff like that. And so I think it's incumbent upon us as Americans to make the future of America an America that we can all buy into, that we can all stand strong in. And so that's, you know, when we first proposed this interview, things weren't different, but the tensions kind of ramped over the last few weeks between China and the U.S. It got a little tense there for a minute at one point. I was encouraged to see President Xi come over and visit with President-elect Trump, I guess. At least I assume that's where he went. I just saw an article saying he was over here. That seems promising. Right? It seems that we're trying to pave a future together and work together, which is what we need to do. I'm of the opinion, and I was talking to my son about this just a day or two ago, that, you know, we're facing another gold rush in space and everything from LA, from low Earth orbit to asteroid mining to lunar mining and building up those industries and learning how to live in space and learning how to operate in space safely and how to spin hotels and spin habitation facilities and stuff like that. And so we are we're standing at the edge of a precipice that needs desperately engineers. It needs mathematicians. It needs physicists. It needs people that are trained at a minimum to, let's say, a master's to a doctorate level, right? People that have a fundamental understanding of this, because these are the people that are going to be building the companies that will lift the rest of the world out of the scarcity mindset that we've existed in for most of our history. And I think the question is how, at least that's my question, is how do we get out of this scarcity mentality, this idea that for me to win, you have to lose, right? That's what if I could choose something to fight, that's what I want to fight, is that we can both win, right? There's plenty for everybody.
I think 2 weeks ago, Trump said China and United States together, we can solve every single problem in the earth, right?
Yep.
So I think it's a good comment. And then if this is really happened, China and the United States stop fighting, stop pushing each other, start shake the hand, start working on those kind of problems.
I agree.
That would be great, right? I think China has lots of kind of strengths on construction infrastructures in certain industries, right? And then United States has super strengths in financial, in AI. Look at all the Silicon Valley companies, right? So on innovations, on next generation technologies, right? So if both countries can shake hands, stop fighting, that'd be great. So my daily job is supply chain, right? So my feeling for previous couple years, I can share with my feeling, right? So Trump got all the tariffs, right? The tariffs makes my job super difficult.
Sure.
So from China, you have all different kind of tariffs, right? So from 10% to 600% tariff, right? So that makes China very difficult to keep exporting, compete, right? And then also compete from other countries. country's
right.
goods, right? But I know, I understand that like 10 years ago, right, made in China is all shitty, crappy, cheap mm-hmm. stuff, right? But China manufacturing has been improving a lot
yes.
in the previous mm-hmm. couple years, right? So if all the anti-dumping happening because of the Trump's administration like a couple years ago, and then who will take the cost?
Right.
The consumers in the United States, right? Because
yeah.
you'll pay higher dollar amount to buy same quality goods
right.
from other countries or made in USA, right?
Sure.
So I don't think that's kind of a good strategy for long term. I understand the perspective why he wants to raise a tariff for China, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a kind of a tariff side. And also what I can see is that it's not continuous. All the policies I see in states is not continuous. For example,
do you mean consistent?
Inconsistent.
Yeah,
inconsistency, right?
Right, right?
So in China, maybe it's only one party, right? Right. The government say they want to do something. The people trust the party, and then the government will most likely will do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, for example, the party said we want to build a high-speed way, a train, right? The people will believe it. And maybe in 2 years, there's a high-speed train already there,
right?
Right?
Yeah.
But here, maybe because of the two parties kind of fighting each other every 4 years,
mm-hmm.
right? The policy I can see is in these 4 years, China and United States, they have very good relationship. The next 4 years, the tariff
yeah.
for Donald Trump, right?
Yeah.
And then after another 4 years, start smoothing, and then things not as crazy as before. Another 4 years come again. For example, Trump come again, right?
right?
Mm-hmm. Another tariff is coming,
right.
right? So those kind of inconsistencies sometimes makes me feel like it's difficult for me to do my daily job.
Right.
Very understandable.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that does make sense.
Yeah. For example, the last couple months, the reason why I was so busy is I have to get rid of the China supply chain and find other countries' supply chain because Trump is coming.
Right.
And then what happened?
Right.
In 2 months.
Right.
Right. Another tariff is coming. Mm. Right. I have to try to find another supply chain with higher pricing, lower quality, less mature supply chain, but I have to develop those, right?
Right.
So those kind of inconsistency, right, makes me feel like every 4 years I will have a headache.
Yeah.
Right. So if China and United States can really kind of stop fighting with each other, start shaking hands,
yeah.
start kind of have a winning game instead of I win, you lose, like you said.
Right.
The world will be much, much better.
Right.
Yeah.
Based on, like, just your personal opinion, why do you think Trump is, like, initiating these tariffs on China?
I think Trump is a businessman,
mm-hmm.
right? Make America great again. First is, like, if there is no manufacturing in the United States,
that's right.
How are you going to make America great again?
Right.
Right. I don't want to say the policy before Trump, but China's supply chain has been very strong. China manufacturing has been pretty strong. And then made in USA has been deprioritized, right? Prioritized, right? So people start accepting made in China, made in Vietnam, made in Asia, made in other countries, right?
Right.
So if you want to make America good again, you have to have domestic manufacturing. That's what I think.
I agree.
Basic right. economics.
Economics, the laborers, right, the job, you need to create jobs,
yes.
right, you need to kind of reduce the unemployment rate, those kind of stuff.
I think that's my understanding of his goal, is onshoring, is the idea is if you make it cheaper, what we make, the cheapest path to a goal is the one that we're going to take, but we're capitalist, right, mm-hmm. it's a capitalist economy, and so the route that gets you the quickest, the easiest with the highest profit margin is the one that's going to be taken. And if that is going to the lowest bidder who has whatever, you know, whatever, let's not talk about sourcing. Let's talk about tariffs. My understanding of the intention of the tariff specifically is to bring manufacturing back, is to bring jobs back here so that it is no longer cheaper just to build up jobs in China. It's actually cheaper to open factories here and bring jobs here bring workers here, bring everything here, and let's do it here. So I see that as a good thing with regard to a short-term strategy. I don't see it as a good long-term strategy. We can't just tariff China just because it's China. We can't tariff Russia because it's Russia, which we are. I don't know if they're still embargoing them, but that was a result of the Ukrainian conflict, which, yeah, I don't know that I want to get into that. But I think the goal has to be, I agree, mutual prosperity, right? How do we both survive it? And if the answer is that it's, and this is what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that the answer is, you know, it's no longer just the idea that we just build and manufacture and ship out in China and ship over here because we can do that cheap. Even though some of the reasons we're doing that is because our access to supply chains is through the South China Corridor is cheap and it's available, and we can get the supplies that we need brought in. We can manufacture what we need in country. But then when we ship it over, it's super cheap to sell. And so it ends up being a 30-cent shirt at Walmart instead of a $25 shirt at the store in the mall. I think the challenge there is if we were to incentivize bringing that over here, then that also incentivizes China companies to come into the U.S. and to build manufacturing facilities here.
There are lots of China manufacturing coming to the U.S. right now.
That's right. And yeah. I think there's a lot of it going on in Mexico as well as a result of some of the policy ambiguity that's going on right now.
Yep.
Like I mentioned a little bit ago, you guys are a significant investor in the Mexican economy right now. And Mexico is poised to do amazing things over the next 10, 15 years.
Yep.
And so, like I said, I think we're at a precipice. I think we're at a point where we have to ask ourselves globally, do we really want to do we want to feed every mouth? Do we want to lift humanity into a non-scarcity economy that we don't have to, that you don't have to lose something for me to get something? And I think Trump's reasoning for the tariff mentality is because right now you can tell that we are paying too much and spending too much, and that it's disadvantageous to us because the national debt's still rising. Now, a lot of that is the ways we're spending that national debt and the way that we're operating the deficit and the way we're operating a lot of things. So there needs to be an efficiency introduced into the system. But at the end of the day, overpaying just because we can isn't a good reason to do that. So I hope that it incentivizes onshoring the way that it's intended to. I hope it's not just a inconsistent slapping of tariffs. You know, I hope that it produces the desired effect. And I would hope that it has like a 5-year horizon on it, right? Like, look, let's 5 years. Let's make it cheaper over the next 5 years for you to start moving over here and start working with us over here. Bring jobs over here. Let us work, because we don't want to just be a consumer society, right? We want to be we want to be a manufacturing society. And we want to have that in play as well. And so I hope that this diversification of the global supply chains that's occurring right now is a good effect. It's kind of like rolling a set of dice, though, right? You're not sure. We are the ones that determine whether it works out well or not. So, but yeah.
I mean, you're talking about hope. You can do more than hope. You got economic advisors.
Well, I can do it. And vote.
So yeah, you know, definitely that's what you want to focus on, strengthening your infrastructure, and you do that by, you know, lessening like the imports and exporting more. So you want it, like you said, you want to do it, you know, not for an extended period of time, but, you know, enough to, as a stopgap, you know, stop hemorrhaging money,
right,
slow down so you can build your infrastructure so you can actually, you know, start manufacturing from within.
Right.
You know, and be productive,
right,
you know, in the United States. So if he does it right, you know, it should work out. If he does it wrong, then, well.
Right.
Everybody's going to say, well, I told you so.
Otherwise, we end up where we are now, which is one of the few industries that spun up as the military-industrial complex, right, where we're in the business of war. And we have a huge problem with that right now. You know, we have large DOD contractors that are just – they're bloated.
Profits and war.
Right. And they are in the business of automating and prioritizing efficiency in war. And that's, I just don't think that's where our future is. I hope that's not where our future is.
You definitely want to move away from that.
Yeah, right. Because that just doesn't have any, we don't, we don't want to be a hegemony, right? We don't want to be hegemonic. We want to. I don't think most Americans do. I think most Americans just want us to move to a post-scarcity globe, you know, a world. I think that would be, I think if we could come up with a pathway to do that, I think most people would do that. China is one of the most rapidly developing industrialized nations over the past like 30 or 40 years. How far are you guys from reaching us? And I understand your metropolitan areas. Do you have any idea what percentage of people live in urban versus rural? Is it a significant portion of the population? I know you have some crazy large cities over there, like
Shanghai.
Shanghai, 23 Shanghai. Million people type megalopolis.
I think right now it's like 35.
Is it 35 million?
Yeah, 35 million.
That's an insane amount of people. It's crazy.
The total population for the United States is like 300 million.
Right? I think it's 380.
380.
Yeah. No, last I looked, about 380.
Close to 400
million. Okay. Yeah. Basically one-tenth of the United States population
in one city. Yeah.
And we brag about New York.
Yeah, right.
Eight million in New York.
Yeah. No, I've seen you guys' cities are impressive. Yeah. It's not just that, your construction projects are Herculean, and you guys move mountains. It's incredible. I've never seen anything like it.
Yep. So I have been back to China 4 times last year. Basically, every time I go back to China, I was feeling like the infrastructure for the entire city is much, much better advanced than New York. That's what I'm feeling, right? So, but economic right now, I don't think it's very good. That's what I'm seeing.
Are you talking like a maintenance issue? Is it not maintained as well in New York, or is it older in New York? Or
infrastructure is super new, super nice, but the total economic right now in Shanghai, in China, I think it's not as good as 4 years ago.
Right.
So maybe it's because of COVID, maybe because of the housing tariff.
And that took a chink out of you guys.
The stock market.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, guessing.
The stock market in China is
uncertainty. Yeah.
So I don't think China is growing as fast as 5 years ago before COVID.
Yeah.
There are lots of reasons behind that. Yeah. So I do see lots of issues.
Sure.
Yeah.
How do you see, what's your take on what's going on in Hong Kong? So the imposition, the recent reminder that they're under Chinese rule and the overtake of parliament and all that. What are your thoughts on that?
So I think I can share a little bit feeling about human rights in China.
Sure.
Right. So China has different problems, different issues for human rights versus the United States. China has so many people, right?
Yes.
The population in China is more than 5 times.
1.4 billion, I think, right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
5 times then bigger than states, right? So So in same amount of the space,
right?
There will be 5 more. For example, your home, you only need 1 people to stay, right? 1 family to stay. But at the exact same space, China need to have 10 families living in the same space.
Right.
So there are so many people in China.
We're measuring our population per acre. You guys are measuring it by per square foot.
Not per square foot.
It's a different, it's a different metric. I got you.
So there are too many people.
Yeah.
Right. So free speech for that big population is kind of difficult, I think.
Do you?
And then also, if majority of the people is not higher educated, that causing big issue. I think the education level in United States, the education level is still much higher than the China. Right. So, for example, if there's an AI robot, right, sending all the kind of crazy speeches on the internet, so what China government is doing is controlling majority of the bad part. Whatever you see bad, they will delete it, right? So that's kind of free speech issue in China. So the government wants to make the society it's kind of safe. And also, there's no major issue happening. That's good enough, right? They don't want any issue happening. For example, protesting. So If you kind of don't do anything, you just say something on the internet, the government will not do anything. But if you want to protest, if you want to have a group of people going out to start protesting and then start doing some like regular things in the United States, the government will stop you.
Right. Encouraging civil unrest.
Right. So, for Hong Kong has been managed by United Kingdom for 100 years.
Yes.
Right.
Lease just expired.
Yes.
Yes. Well, it was renewed through 2049, but yeah.
So, almost 100 years of Western culture, and then versus the newer China culture, there will definitely be lots of conflict. That's what I see. Exactly. Right?
Yeah.
And also the education system in Hong Kong and then also in the mainland China is totally different. Right? It's kind of 100% Western education and then 100% like the traditional China education is 100% different. Right? So the management system is different. Right? And then there are lots of Hong Kong people I know has been living in Hong Kong, especially the rich people.
Mm-hmm.
They go to UK, they go to Australia, they go to Japan, right? So what I see is rich people is always smart, right? You can only trust their brain, right? So if they left, there must be a reason why they left,
yeah.
Right? So Hong Kong, in my heart, is always a place free of speech, like economy, super good, stock market, awesome, and then very good for business, right? So, but China is different style. China control the money, right? China government control the money. For example, in China, I cannot wire money out without a reason. I cannot receive money without a reason from overseas, right? So it's not very good for business,
right?
So
that was the entire point of Hong Kong.
Right, so the two different way of management for the government, right, definitely will create conflict. But China is doing like a one country, two different kind of government. But I think it makes sense for me to have those kind of conflict because the people don't want those kind of right, free speech right, and also the they can do anything without worry about the government, about the free speech, about the sending the money without, right? So understand the conflict there.
I think like they had to worry about their standings too. Mm-hmm. I think we talked a little bit about
social credit score.
Yeah,
social credit score, right?
And things like that.
So in China, the couple times I was in China before, I don't use any cash. In China, basically, you don't need cash.
All digital.
All digital, right? All the monies, majority of the monies are digital, right? So it's attached to your Alibaba, right? And also the WeChat. You can do anything, basically, in China. With that two apps,
right?
You can pay anyone, you can wire any money. But if you have bad credit score, you are fully transparent with the government,
right?
You don't have anything you can hide from the government. That's what I see.
But right? Bad credit score doesn't just mean not paying your bills, right? Mm. That also means being socially disruptive or
yeah, like protests and things like that.
Yep. So if you go to a train, want to use a train in China, you need to you can either face recognition, right, or you use your ID card, right? So if you have bad credit score, you are not allowed to use public transportation.
Right.
That's pretty bad, I think.
Yeah.
Right. I think it's a human right to use public transportation, right, especially in China. You can't go nowhere without public transportation. So you cannot do an airplane ticket.
Right.
You have to fix your credit score before you can do anything.
Right.
Mm. So
how do you fix it?
It's like pay your bill, pay whatever your debt, do good, right? So, and also in China, basically the criminal rate, I think, is pretty low.
Yeah.
You cannot hide from the cameras.
Right.
In the United States, to be honest, when I'm speeding, as long as I don't caught by the police, I'm fine. But in China, it's different.
Yeah.
It's cameras everywhere. You're speeding past the radar everywhere.
Yeah.
So basically, if you speed, your phone start kind of getting text message. You speed at this highway at this time.
Yep.
You got $200 fine. You have to pay.
Right.
So that's what happened in China. Mm. In the States, as long as police don't catch you, you're fine. Right.
And even if you do, you're fine. and just pay a fine.
I think they're trying to, change that now. It's like, yeah, we're going to get you. We're going to get our money. You're going to give a notice, and then we'll come to your house. And
yeah. So, but in China, it's like you cannot hide anything right now.
Yeah.
Right? Mm. The money, you cannot hide because it's all digital. If you're criminal, if you want to kill some people, you cannot hide because you are under cameras. You have all the cameras here. Right? To be honest, is that good? For some part, it's good.
Well, yeah, so...
You're safe.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But as long as watching.
What are you sacrificing?
You're sacrificing is like you have been watching by the government for the whole time, right?
Yeah, I definitely meant it rhetorically.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, so keep in mind you're talking to a couple of Americans, so where my brain explodes at the free speech, right? Mm-hmm. Because And this is a hard one because I'm intrigued by the way you discuss free speech.
Mm-hmm.
You seem to discuss, and correct me if I'm wrong, you seem to discuss it as if, yeah, we have to sacrifice it, but there's a greater good. And I think that it offers a level of I'm not sure you defined it, but a level of, I think the word's control, that may be necessary to manage.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm curious about is, speaking specifically to the need for free speech, or the lack of need of free speech, what is the difference between somewhere like China with the population challenges and infrastructural challenges and economic challenges that it has, and somewhere like here? At what point does the U.S. get to a point where it needs to control free speech? In your mind, what do you think? Do we ever get there? Because there is a contingent of Americans that would say, we will never reach that point. That will never happen. And you will have to kill me to take that.
Correct.
And yeah.
So, to be honest, tons of Chinese people know.
I'm not claiming it's right. I'm curious. I'm wondering how you see it, right? That's what we're doing here.
More and more Chinese people realize they don't have free speech.
Yeah.
Right? And then they find other ways to talk. Mm-hmm. Even though they are using the same app, they will find another way to say whatever they want to say. I think more educated Chinese people realize the government having issue. They don't have free speech, and then they want to change.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the government is feeling that too. The government is feeling that the more educated Chinese people don't satisfied on the current situation. They want more. The new generation want more. They want more free.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the reason why I come to the United States, there's one reason. Yes, I come here, I have free speech, I can do anything I want. I don't need to worry about if I do this thing, my parents will lose job, right? I don't need to worry about that kind of stuff. So
that's a big deal.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a big deal.
Big deal.
So I can, because I see things in two ways.
And this isn't pity. I'm sorry you had to grow up with it. That can't be a good feeling.
Yeah, I see things in two ways. So China government is doing a good job for economy for last 30 years from nothing compared to Japan, then from economic-wise to number two in the world, right?
Yeah.
So the government is doing a good job, but the government definitely sacrificed lots of human rights, lots of, right?
Yeah.
So China and the United States is different. China can focus, the government can focus one thing and then use all the resources to do that. And then people don't have right to say no, right? But here, I think people were yelling at the government and then pulling their guns if government is doing something wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just different.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Things like one of the shocking things is, you was joking about it earlier, you know, you pulled out your AR. And everything we can walk down the street.
I'm sure
you
know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you gotta know what I'm talking about. Yeah, I mean, you could legally carry weapons, you know, firearms down the street, and it was something like the Second Amendment that, like, Americans really fight hard for that because of that. They're afraid of that tyranny that could happen in the United States. Like when you're mentioning, like, cameras and everything, always watching you. You know, some states do have, like, camera readers where they read your license plate, so if you speed or something, then they will send you a ticket or something like that in the mail. But generally, as Americans, I think we do feel like we don't want to give the government that control because we see that level of control where it can lead to. So you see why we're hesitant about giving up our freedoms, like freedom of speech and the right to, you know, carry weapons and things like that. So it's, you know, it's an interesting, like, parallel just you discussing that with us, you know, and I'm, you know, I'm grateful and thankful that you are sharing that information.
I am
with
as well.
Us. But, yeah, it's just something how Americans view, you know, like our freedoms. So that's why we're very serious about it.
Yeah. But I understand what I'm seeing lots of bad things on the China side, but actually lots of good things in China side too.
Sure.
So even though people in China, lots of people don't have free speech, but they're happy in China. There are lots of happy people in China. So when I go back to China, lots of people are happy, right? So they doesn't feel they lost the free speech. I can see 99% of the people don't feel they lost the free speech right. They don't feel they lost a human right, right? They are comfortable for the life they are living right now.
Mm-hmm.
So should I say they are stupid? No. Lots of those people are smart. They are having their own business.
Of course.
They enjoy the life there. They love the government. They love the life they are living. But it's just kind of a, if you living in that environment, you feel happy. And then you don't feel you lose anything. It's just kind of a different. If you live there for a long time, you don't feel anything. So, but for example, me, if I'm not living in that environment, I come to States, I feel like, oh, it's different. It's totally different. But the people living there is actually happy. If you ever got a chance to go to China, you will feel majority of the people are happy, right? They are used to that environment.
Mm-hmm.
They will not say those kind of bad things because they trust their government. They are satisfied with the lives they are living. They don't want to do bad things. They are used to the cameras there watching them. They used to, if they touch the rules, like they break the rules, they will get a fine or get a ticket, right? For example, the speeding ticket, right? They used to, they cannot do bad things. If they do bad things, they cannot do anything. For example, the public transportation, right? They used to that rules.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? So, for example, parents, they love PCC. They love China. They think they are the best. They think they are so happy, so grateful to live in that country. Right? For example, last couple of weeks when I go travel to Africa, right? Even though I see their life is not as good as I'm here in the United States, but they enjoy their life. They're
right.
Super happy. They're super grateful they live in that world.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it's just different. Education is different. The way that the people thinking is different.
Yes.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I think everybody should love the country that they're living in.
Yeah. And yeah. And work to better them. Yes.
Yeah.
Including us, every one of us. I mean, I love the country I was born and raised in, and I've contributed it to it in the way that I've been able and felt called, and I wonder, is there an element to it that you're happy? Because if you're not, there's consequences.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It's like, so you think the overwhelming majority of people are just happy and see, to us, this is, this is sacrosanct to us. I can't imagine, it breaks my heart because I can't imagine feeling like I have to say something to someone or appease someone in order to be justified in my existence. Now, there are plenty of people that feel that way for many reasons every day here. I'm not trying to act like that we've eradicated inequality or that we've somehow, you know, I'm not trying to be a better than. I don't guess I've ever looked at, we have a Bill of Rights that are enshrined in our Constitution, alongside of our Constitution. And it's a declaration of inalienable rights, things that we have the right to. Now we do, there's always at an industrial or a economic or a social level, there's always the tipping scale of how far do you impede on rights, you know, to ensure safety? Like, do we implement automated ticketing systems if the answer is we want to reduce highway fatalities, the answer might be yes, right? And we can all vote on that. We can all agree on that. But I am 100% sure that we would draw the line at not being able to disparage something that we disagree with. You know, you can have someone in this country that screams, calls you names, insults you, and denigrates you, and just every time you run across them, and you can't do anything unless they break the law. That's because they have the right to say whatever they want. And that's a very interesting thing. It's a very interesting because yeah, you could make the argument there are plenty of unhappy people, but at the same time, I'm wanting to quote Ibid, right? It's like, it's, you know, when laws are girded too tight, it's you know, the soul's a Cinco. It's an interesting conundrum, and I wonder at what point the cutoff is. You know, at what point does a population justify truly, because it's all, it's, I'm all well and good with it, with someone being happy and proud and everything. I draw the line at not being able to not be happy, right? Like if I am happy, if I'm not happy, I can't show it. That's the dangerous territory, the murky waters you wade into when you say you just can't complain. And if you do, it's going to cost you, and you can't use the subway anymore. That's a terrifying prospect, right? Now, that has gone on for generations in this country in different reasons, some of which we try to address in this podcast, right? So when we talk about racism or we talk about things, and it's equally heartbreaking, it's equally evil everywhere I see it applied. But that's my recognition. That's my compass, is I see it as evil. I see it as hatred. And so I see telling a group of people that they can't complain, or that they can't disparage, or they can't speak, or they can't speak their mind, I see it as inherently evil and anti-human. So I think that most Americans would agree with me on that.
That
feels like a bedrock American ideal, but so, it's interesting. I hadn't considered it in the perspective you're enlightening it. So thank you.
Jeremy, when I say that, so it's like people cannot free speech. I mean, the free speech I mean is on the internet.
Yeah.
It's a posting to the public. But for example, me and my friends talking with each other, we give the party middle finger. We can free speech with each other.
But you can't do it on the street corner, right? You have to be inside behind closed doors.
No.
No.
I can yelling at with my friends about the party on the street, but the things I cannot post on the internet.
Right, I got you.
Okay. Right? So the government cannot control I say it or not, but they can control what happened on the internet.
Right.
So that's a free speech I'm talking about. But talking with you, like, for example, if we are in China, we can talk about those kind of topics on the street.
Yeah.
As long as we don't post on the internet, we're fine. That's what I'm understanding.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
So when I was in college, me, my friends, my classmates, we're all talking about politics. We all have opinions. We can speak.
Right.
We can talk. But we just cannot post.
Right.
We post, it will be deleted.
Right.
Right. So that's a free speech I'm referring to. I'm not talking about we cannot say
you.
It.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, here we get into a lot of trouble. Like, well, not trouble, but you know, as far as like the government control, but other people have their own opinions, like everybody have their own opinions. Like a lot of people don't like hate speech. Nobody likes hate speech. You know, you get to the problem of like who controls what is actually hate speech.
Yeah, who defines what hate speech is.
What that is. But you want to have the law, but the problem is like you want people to be better. You know, you want to have the attitude like, you know, I shouldn't be spreading hate. You know, just be spreading hate. You know, I shouldn't be having doing these things that, you know, just basically constitute as being a bad human being. You know, you want people to get to that point, you know, where it shouldn't matter. Like, you wouldn't have to worry about them, you know, saying or doing things that are going to affect or harm, you know, society.
Yeah, all things may not be all things may be permissible, but not advisable, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's all well and good until you get to a point where you have someone telling you what's permissible. That's where it's challenging. And we do that in this country. You can't kill people. There's a social contract, right? My rights end at taking yours. And that's a very communal approach to it. But yeah, I guess, and I think this is part of the not knowing all the details. I mean, because we hear that, and you hear there's a camera on every corner, and it's like, well, what happens if you say something in one of those cameras, right? What happens if you get flagged? What happens? You get tickets for complaining about the party? You know, how far does this go? Because the questions that an American wants to ask, at least this American, is how far could it go, right? What happens if that becomes the next step? And what would be needed to implement that? And the answer is nothing. You know, I'm confident that if we were to get drug in somewhere, someone were to sue us for this podcast, right? I'd go in, and any judge in the state's gonna go get out of here. This is ridiculous. What are you talking about? He's exercising his rights to say what he wants. I can't imagine not having that. I can't imagine that being subject. You mentioned an element of, I guess, what I'm feeling when you mentioned that every 4 years, you know, the policies can change because one side will take over, and ideally we hit some middle of the road, some middle ground where everybody benefits and it stops being this tug of war. But if we're talking about rights and liberties and freedom, that's a completely different gamble. Yeah. You know, that's, if that could be taken next, then you have a problem. And that flashes back to things like Tiananmen Square and you know, things where it's like, okay, or the student movement that's going on today, where the no work, you know, not participating in the economy movement. I forget what it was called. I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank right now. But yeah, that's where my mind goes. But interesting.
Yep. Well, I do have a question for you.
Yeah, shoot, go for it.
What do you think about the two parties kind of a perspective on LGBT group?
On the what?
LGBT group.
LGBT.
Yeah.
LGBTQIA plus group.
Yes.
LGBT rights. Well, are you asking how I see both parties seeing it?
I think Republican and Democrats definitely have huge difference opinions on that group, right?
Yeah.
For policy, everything.
Yeah. And I'm going to have to, I'll answer, and then I'll let him answer, because I'm going to have to out myself a little bit on this one. I typically don't dive too deeply into my political opinions, but if I were to articulate the problem that I see with the way the two sides see it, if it's okay, that's what I'd like to address, because I do think they see it differently. And I think that one side sees it as an attempt to force an ideological standpoint on people. I think that they see it as an imposition of ideologies, and this would be the right. The right sees this as you're trying to ideologically divide people by group, and no matter how you divide people, whether it's by color, by race, by nationality, by sex, by gender, whatever it is, however you divide people, you're wrong from the beginning, and to continue dividing people in that way is completely inappropriate. And you have the other side on the left that has seemed to walk this suggestion of ideological segregation or separation or at least delineation down to a point that we've reached a point where they're using the tools that they decry, they're using the things that they say they are fighting against in support of their goals. So we want to more ideologically divide people. We want to increase the separation. We want people, and it seems that, I think, is the heart of the disagreement. It's easy to say, oh, people, some, this group likes this idea, and that this people don't like it, or this people like transitioning, you know, from one gender to, I don't think that's as much at the heart of the issue as maybe the mainstream news. We live in a country where the media, in my opinion, has been very bought and paid for. It's highly propagandistic. And the result of that is what you see are the shiny items that they want you to be focusing on. And so you have to sort of look through the mist, right, and focus on what's actually being said and what's actually happening. And it's very difficult to do, especially in this information age that we live in. So I think that's the basis of the disagreement is you have the right saying, look, we don't want to divide people, whether it's ideologically or any other way. We want an egalitarian meritocracy. We want things to be merit-based, and we want things to be dealt with as they are. So you know, I understand if you don't feel like you're a gender, that doesn't mean you can go play in, you can't climb in a boxing ring with the opposite sex being three times their size and fight them. You can't go into a day spa and change with women because you feel like you've decided you're a woman. And there are practical applications to that. There are reasons that I see that that's the case. I think the fact that we're dealing with it as a culture and a society, just, I think we've given a little too much credence to the ideological divides. That's my personal opinion on it. I can't troubleshoot it much better than that. I see it as noise and baiting one another. So I see it as, oh, look at this problem. Look, you got this problem. Look how wrong they are, how right they are. And look how it's a kind of virtue signaling. And I don't like it. I think it distracts from the real problems that we have. That's my opinion. What do you think, D?
I agree.
Go figure. No, that's a Democrat, ladies and gentlemen.
No, I definitely like feel the same way. To me, with the parties, I think they just play them against each other. That's how you kind of try to make everybody feel like they're the same. Like you mentioned, like transgenders, you know, like being able to compete in sports, you know, with, you know, same gender people and everything like that. And then, like, politically, you play to that crowd. You want them to feel like they're marginalized, or, like, to give them a victim mentality, to make them feel like their opinion doesn't matter. You want to give them, build up this fake illusion, like, that people don't recognize them as being people when that's not the case. But they'll put that in your mind. And, you know, it's just a little bit of my opinion. But, yeah, I agree with what Jeremy's saying. Yeah, I'm just not going to elaborate on everything that he said because he just said it. But that's how I feel about it. I believe the political parties are just really play them to just secure votes. And I think if they realize that, you know, they don't have to buy into this wokeness that we attach to them, then I think they'll feel a lot better about themselves, and they won't have to go through this rigmarole that you always hear about them being marginalized, or, you know, people don't care about them, or other things that you probably heard in the news or on social media or something like that.
I actually think that this last election, I think people said we're tired of hearing about it. I think people said we're tired of hearing about this and not the reasons why we're waging economic wars on the countries around us, on our trading partners, why we're marching Russia into a corner trying to start World War III, why we've started wars on every continent in this planet in the last 40 years. I think there are a number of issues where the American people said, okay, just stop with the crap, right? Let's stop with the noise. These are shiny things that you're just trying to distract people with. We need elections run on real issues. We need elections run on things that matter, that are going to impact policy. Is our government going to grow or is it going to shrink? Right, one side's advocating a highly socialistic advancement of services being provided from the top down from the government. The other side is advocating reining it in and shrinking that government like crazy. So it's a different perspective. I think that this last election, it did turn more socialistic in nature than it really has in the past. When we started talking about speech and things like that, that's not normal in the States. That's not a typical debate fodder. Is the First Amendment usually doesn't get bounced around like, oh yeah, we need to control that. That's highly unusual. And I think that it was just a symptom of exactly how out of sync one of the parties got with its voting base, personally.
I think what happened in China is China government never promoting the LGBTQ++, those kind of culture.
Yeah.
We're having the same issue. There's a certain group of people in China is belong to that group, right? And then I think the government what they did is deleting everything from the internet.
Yeah.
Do not promoting anything, those kind of information from the public.
Right.
Let's solve by themselves. So it's totally different two ways what I can see from the two government. Here is like one side promoting it, make it as a big noise. The other side, Trump just said there's only two, man, woman, right? Male and female, right? So here it's kind of different ways. There's one party promoting,
yeah,
right, and then the next party is pretty different.
Yeah,
yeah,
Interesting. Yeah, and that's, I think that's back to the speech issue, right? The ability to, because that's the only alternative if you're a, well, we live in an interesting day and age when a small subset of the population can garner a large amount of attention with the internet and social media. And the squeaky wheels actually can make noise over the thronging millions if they decide to. And that's not a bad thing. But we also have to keep it in perspective, I think. I think we have to keep our focus, which this is, in so many ways, I feel like this is an information age. We didn't necessarily anticipate that the result of the information age would be the denigration of information, right? The, we cannot allow it to affect the dissolution of truth, though, right? The war, let's be clear, the war is on truth, in fact, in reality. We have to, what we say has to be truth and real. And so I don't, and I'm not using that to disparage either side. I'm saying let your yes be yes and your no be no. So.
All right.
Well, you have any other questions?
I think we, I don't know if you have anything else that you wanted to share.
Any questions?
No, I think we have a very good discussion. Okay.
I think we have as well. I think this has been an incredible discussion, and I really do appreciate it. This has been a lot of fun, and we're welcome to do it again, too. There's no reason we can't, but thank you so much for coming in and talking with us, and it's been a pleasure, and I hope you have a great night, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks,
thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.